Tonight we got a big turnout for Brian. He accepted the invitation to speak. If he could speak on the week of Halloween. So there must be something there that he wants to share with us. Come on up, Brian.
Thank you. I am Brian. I'm Carl's Sober Alcoholic. I forgot my mask, but they said I wouldn't need one. Well, I got stuck today in going over my notes and making more notes and making more notes. This is a prompt two time. You know what time it is? It's Miller time. If you don't drink. No, if you do drink. Well, hi, I am Brian, and I am powerless over alcohol. I said that. And I and this is not one side, it's two sides. But and they say our stories disclose in a general way what used to be like, what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. That's pretty general. Annie, my first few meetings, I read the promises, and I read it the exact same way. How does that go? Where's that sign there? That feeling of usefulness and self-pity did disappear. I got to feeling uselessness. Anyway, that was a mistake. But I didn't catch that. So I was born in April of 1953, yon century near a century ago. I was in lots of stuff when I was 2 years old. God, that's pretty early, huh? And not only that, I got run over by a big 5,000-pound truck. I was a follower then. I'd follow my brother anywhere he'd go, you know. And so at 4 years old, he and his buddy are going to jump into this truck that's waiting outside our apartments. And the guy was inside changing the water softeners. And he leaves it running. Well, my brother and his friend jump in the truck, and I jump in it also, and I go around to the back, and they mess around with all the stuff, and suddenly it starts moving. And they jump out the sides into the yard, because the yard is up by the side of the truck, and I jump out the back and fall underneath the wheels, and it runs over me. And I get squished. And then the lady across the street was washing her dishes, and she saw it all happen. And the truck is going down the street, and it's going to run off and hit something else. And she runs outside and stops the truck. And she told my mom that I tried to get up. But obviously I couldn't get up, and I passed out and fell down. And there I was. And so I went into the hospital intensive care, and they put me in a body cast and up to here. And my left leg was broken in two places, and they had a bar between my legs. You know, here I am 2 years old, and I'm all cast. And so my mom scared me around by this bar and all my cast. Whole lot of things were supposed to happen that didn't happen, thank God, because I probably would still be handicapped. But because I was so young, I guess I healed. You've been healed, boy. Okay, it's enough of that one. I don't remember much before I was four, because I just don't remember. There was an operation done to my bladder, because my bladder exploded, and And there was, I was, according to Hoyle, the second successful operation of a new form of stitching, because all the previous ones, kids that had their, or people whose bladders had been busted open, died because urine gets in your system and it'll kill you. And the form of stitching that they used would always come apart, you know, within however much time. And mine didn't, and thank God I'm still here today. And so my stitching is probably 53 years old. I'll have you know I don't expect to go anytime soon. My parents were divorced also, had just gotten a divorce, you know. And my mom says to me, she says, well, you know, your father never came to the hospital to see you when you were crushed. Well, I didn't know him anyway, so I didn't care. He came, gave my brother a drum set on his four or five year old birthday, and it really pissed my mom off because he was banging on the drums all the time, and she thought it was a direct result of her ex's antagonism towards her. Well, you know how people are; they feel these things that don't really. Well, who knows? We lived in a low-rent neighborhood because we were on welfare. She worked part-time. We were very poor. My father never paid. Well, once in a while, on birthday, he'd send us each $25. And Christmas, we'd each get $50, which was cool. But he never paid child support, and so my mom had to support us. And we lived near, in this neighborhood, was near the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. And the public school we went to was operated by the University of Wisconsin, and so it was really advanced. When I was in the first grade, we had language classes in... Twice a week, we'd go learn Spanish, and then a couple of days later we'd go learn French, and we'd learn these words in French and Spanish, you know, and phrases. What was really neat was, I don't know if you've seen these office buildings where they got all these separate little rooms and people behind these boards, and they're all doing sales stuff on the phone. Well, that's what it was like in this grade school. We each had a little booth and a tape recorder and a headset and a microphone. And so they recorded everything. That was cool. That was then. Oh, in third grade, I got a girlfriend. I mean, that wasn't really, I don't think. I guess I always liked girls. So, the thing is, this girl was from Ireland. Is that again? Calling again? Oh, I shut it off. No, I didn't. So, in the third grade, I got a girlfriend. Her name was Heather. She was from Ireland. And I'd walk her home from school every day after school. And she'd say hi to the crossing guard, and that was all good terms there. Well, we'd go back to her house, and we'd play house under her bushes in the backyard, and she taught me how to French kiss. So, boy, I went from there. I thought that was pretty cool anyway. I saw people smoking cigarettes. This is when my addictions started to take place. I'd see people smoking cigarettes, and I'd go, wow, man, I want to do that too. So one day, I'm out in front by the street. You know, we lived on this street where you have about that much yard between the street and the sidewalk, and then you had not even that much, a little bit of room up in the front yard to the house. It was a tenement area. And it was pretty low rent, and like I said, everybody there was on welfare. There was about 180 kids on our city block, and these were all two and three story houses that had apartments in them, and every apartment was full, you know. And there's a lot. So I had a great childhood, getting in trouble and raising Cain, and so So I saw this guy walking by and he's smoking a cigarette and he flips it out in the street. And I go, I'm going to get that. So I run over to the street and I get it and I pick it up and I start putting my lips and I look up in the window and there's my mom and my grandmother sitting there in the window. My mom goes like this. And I go, oh, shit. So I go in the house and she sends me to my room, and my grandmother holds me down on the bed, and my mom makes me smoke a whole pack of cigarettes. Well, I guess I couldn't smoke a whole pack of cigarettes. I was blubbering and crying, and threw all the cigarettes out, probably. Anyway, so that was the beginning of that. So, a whole pack. Yeah, I can see that. Make that kid smoke a whole pack. That'll teach him. We always cause trouble, us groups of kids in the block. And there was the neighbors next door had this big porch. Well, everybody had a big back porch, wooden porch. And underneath the porch was this bee's nest. What are those carpenter bees? The big yellow ones with black stripes on them? Yep, no, the yellow jackets are bad. Bumblebees. The ones that we catch in hollyhock flowers. They get in flower and we take the leaves on them, we close them up and we snap it off and we go around and we go this thing going. Anyway, then we'd let them off from people. So that was fun. So my brother and his friends were under this neighbor's porch with their sticks, and they're stirring up this nest and stuff, and I'm sitting there. The porch is like over by those cabinets and lockers, and I'm standing over here, and all of a sudden, out from under that porch comes this big, fat bee. Comes right straight for me, hits me in, and lands on my lip and stings it. And I go home. My mom is laying on the floor talking on the phone. By this time, my lip is double, triple the size. She goes, what happened to you? Well, so here I am going to the hospital again. And that became an addiction. I jumped off this concrete wall and just landed on a nail, and there I go to the hospital again, going to get me a tetanus shot. And then this cat, I really liked this little kitten, and I climbed up on this roof, which was up a story and a half, anyway, climbed up on the roof, and the cat, and I was holding the cat, claws me in the eye, and I go like this, and there's a little piece of filament, you know, a piece of my eye comes off, and I take the cat and I go, and I throw him off the roof. That was the niceness in me coming out. It came out and it was not very nice. That was time flies, in even if you're not having fun, but I had a lot of fun, let me tell you. My brother was into experimenting all the time. We raised night crawlers. Little worms became night crawlers in these old orange crates in the basement at this tenement house. And then we raised mushrooms, and he put them in jars. He'd identify them, and he put labels on them, and make formaldehyde out of powder and water, and put all these. And so he had this huge collection of mushrooms that we collected from out in the woods. We went out in the woods with my grandparents a lot. That was nice. My grandpa was really my pa, and I'd follow him around a lot, and I'd watch him do stuff, and that was cool. Okay, so another thing, my brother, we moved out to on the west side by Midvale School. I started going to a different school, and we found one of those old fashioned tubs, basin, you know, tub you wash in. And we dug a big hole in the backyard and stuck it in the hole. Then we went out to the country, my log parents' grandparents' log cabin, and got all these plants in mud and little tadpoles and frogs, and we started raising frogs and made the tadpoles turn into frogs, and it was really neat. We even put a turtle in there, but that thing started eating the tadpoles, so we had to take it off. There's one important thing. I don't know why I remember this, but there was a solar eclipse that year. Pay attention, boy. Then we couldn't keep that house, so we moved back into the city. And my brother and I, we fought a lot. And here we go with another accident. And he and I were throwing plasters, an old plaster Paris house. And so my mom was getting remodeled. Well, we start throwing plaster at each other from up and up the down or down the up staircase. And he flips one at my... and he hits me, slices right through my eye. Well, I'm going, oh, that's the end of that. So we, this is before school in the morning. We still have to go to school. My mom's already gone to work. And I go to school, and I go to the nurse station about 10 o'clock because my eye's really bugging me. And turns out that my eye had been sliced open, and it was so close to being ruined that the guy at the hospital said he couldn't even measure it with this machine, and the machine was huge. Anyway, so there I go again, going back, getting in more physical stuff. Oh, and I do a lot of things that didn't really have any rhyme or reason why I do them. I just addictively do them. Well, like this one day I come home, and I jump on my bed, but my violin is on the bed, so I crush it. And I get a nickel a week allowance, and I got to pay for it to fix it. Well, I had to do something, so I got me a paper route, a job as a paper boy. And from there, I started going to the correct club at the YMCA. My brother and I both did a lot of things in the YMCA, and we'd sell cookies and saltwater taffy, and we'd get a couple of weeks free at camp every summer. He got a new tent, and I got a new bicycle, and it was a girl's bike though, and I didn't earn a men's bike, a boy's bike. So, and then we go to camp this one summer, and here I am, 10 years old. I had advanced so far in the swimming. I loved swim. I was a junior lifesaver at 10 years old, so I got to be with the big boys in their cabin. So, and then these kids started talking about sex, and I went, no, you guys are terrible, that's cruel. And I go home and tell my mom that, and she laughs and she says, "You just got sex education." That, whether she liked that or not, that's what happened. So. We go down to Illinois. So I lived in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin. We go down to Chicago, Illinois, Deerfield, which is a suburb of Chicago. And my godfather and his family, and he always had lots of liquor around the house. So when I got down there, I got his kids that were younger than me, and we'd go out in the woods, and we'd take a six-pack of Schlitz malt liquor, and we'd get drunk. And the little girl got scared and ran away and went home and told on us. And so when we got back, then her father made all three of us sit there and forced us to drink beer after beer after beer after beer, and to a timer. And all the kids, they started crying and going on and stuff. Well, I just drank and drank and drank. And so they all had to get sent to their rooms, and that was it. And I didn't. But I was drunk. My mom wasn't too happy about that. Now we need to move on. We've gone to the YMCA. We've been with the older boys. Not that way, sweetheart. Because I was in the co-rec club, they'd have speakers from the city come in the co-rec as boys and girls of, I was 11 years old. And And these kids would get speakers. Okay, so the speaker we had was the head of the health department from Madison, Wisconsin. He was doing a talk. He was presenting a talk on drugs, staying away from drugs. Kids stay away from drugs, right? So he's got this table about double the length of that one out in the front, and it's got big old pickle jars full of joints already rolled up, and a bunch of pills and a bunch of hash and all this stuff, and they put all these joints on the table, lined all the way around the table. And so after the talk, all the kids go up and walk around the table, and I'm walking around, and everybody's going real slow all the way around the table while I knocked off a joint. And then I came back around, nobody noticed, I picked it up, and when I got on the bus and went home, I got off the bus early and smoked that joint, and in anticipation I got high. But you don't get high if you just smoke your first joint. But that was a start. And so I began to get into smoking dope. That was cool. I run. Oh, not only that, I drank Boone's Farm apple and strawberry wine. You remember that, yeah? And Ripple and Valley High. And I drank a half gallon of Valley High and ate a gram of. In Boston Commons, and I went swimming with these three girls, and we all got naked. That was how much fun it was, and it was in the middle of the summer, and I was 14 or 15, whatever. God, I'm still a child, and I'm having so much fun, and then I got sick. Oh man, did I get sick? Turns out the girl that gave it to me, I had given her a corner of a Ziploc baggie that I found at Harvard Square, and gave it to her, and she gave it to this guy who's president of the Hells Angels Bike Club in Boston. You know, a couple weeks later goes by, he gives her this, and she tells her to give it to me, because he was really liked what he got. Okay, well, I got so sick then, and she was one of the three girls that I was swimming naked with, and I got sicker than the dog, and because we drank a half gallon of Valley High with that, and that's a barbitol and alcohol. I did that again too in the hospital, but so she goes to him, the biker president, and he takes me home with him and takes care of me for 3 days, and I had to dry heaves, cold hot, dry heaves, dry heaves. Finally, after the third day, I came out of it, and I got the hell out of there, because I just didn't know what. Anyway, so I'm pretty much into doing drinking and doing other drugs. I'm trying to get away from myself. Why am I trying to get away from myself? My life is a cinch. Why do I have to get away from myself? Yeah, the big job I had was I worked as a soda jerk for Baskin Robbins at the bottom of Beacon Hill in Boston. My brother leased me his apartment. He goes to Europe for the summer, convinces my mom to let me take the apartment, and I fly up there from. I had gone to a prep school on Long Island that year before, and he was always into education stuff. So he graduated from Phillips Exeter and goes into Harvard. They start him as a sophomore. He skipped one of his grades in high school. Anyway, so I get his apartment and I get to do anything I want. And so I'm panhandling all day and drinking and then when I didn't have to work selling sodas, ice cream cones. And what a life. So what have I got to run away from? Well, I don't know. I guess it was just the excitement that I thought I needed. It was missing. So I would do all these things that was really not good for me. Don't tell anybody. I really enjoyed Mad Dog. You laughed. You mad. You know about Mad Dog. MD 2020. Baby, that Morgan David is the good stuff. God, I had so much stuff to tell you. When I was in fifth grade, I was walking home from school one day, and my leg just goes out from under me, and I hit the ground, and I just started crying, and I'm going, what's going on? And I go home and tell my mom, here I go to the doctor again, and I get x-rayed, and I've got, in my left knee, I have bone disease. And what the disease is osteochondritis discus. And what happens is the bone quits getting nutrients from blood vessels, and they just draw up. And so that much of the bone pulls away from the knee, from the kneecap. It's part of the kneecap, the inside of the kneecap. And it gets lodged between, it can get lodged between the cartilage in the knee and the kneecap, and it'll pop the kneecap right off. That happened to my my bone doctor, who had operation, he had it in both of his knees, and he had operations, and it messed him up. Well, anyway, he puts me on crutches. He always warns me about, I'm going to put you on crutches. So I get taken out of all sports in halfway through the fifth grade and sixth grade. And the halfway through the seventh grade, it wasn't getting any better. It was getting worse. So he says, you're going on crutches. So I get to be on crutches and all the ridicule. Because I didn't have a cast and I didn't even have a string. You know, I had to walk with crutches. And use my left leg, I used the crutches, okay? Put the weight of my body on the crutches. Didn't want my leg to atrophy otherwise or get all funky if you don't use it. So, well, I had teachers making fun of me. I had students making fun of me, picking fights with me. They keep coming up to the elevator and knocking it open every time it would close. And finally, I just said, bam, put my crutch in. Took out a few of them that way. Well, that didn't last too long. So they stayed away from me, but that made me unique. This guy's weird. Look at him, he's a faker. Well, so here I go with acceptance again. I have to accept things that aren't the way I think is normal at a young age. And I'd cry about it. I'd talk to my mom, and she'd go, oh, poor boy, poor boy. So that's what it was. Even the doctor went to the school and talked to the counselors and principals because some of the teachers were gathering together in the hall, and they're pointing at me as I was getting on the elevator. Well, so what? That happened. Anyway, the disease went away. So in the 10th grade, I get this scholarship to this school in Long Island, and I go to school with Billy Graham's son. Shh, don't talk about that. And then and I get to do track and wrestling. So the disease was gone from my knee. Oh, God, it's coming back. And from then on, I was back in the norm, I thought. And I would drink. Oh, man, me and Ernie Rosiski, my friend, my best friend at the prep school in Long Island, Stony Brook. He was what they call a townie. He lived in the town. His parents were wealthy, and they put him through this school. And in the daytime and at nights, he'd go home, and the weekends he'd go home. Well, we concocted this idea. Brian can come to my house this weekend. So I do that, and we go out, and we get drunk, and his mom and dad, they never really kept too tight of tabs on him, so we'd stay out all night drinking around the island. And in the winter, I remember this one time, we got so drunk, and we were on the snowbank overlooking Long Island Sound, and we both fall asleep or pass out or whatever, and I wake up, and Ernie's getting covered with snow, and I go, Ernie, come on, and I couldn't wake him up. Well, finally he woke up, and we never did that again. It didn't stop us from drinking, though. There's no doubt about that. I was in my drinking escapades. I've seen a lot of bands, big bands in bars, because Madison, Wisconsin is the University of Wisconsin, is a college town. So after the 10th grade, they did not renew my scholarship back at that school, so I had to go back to public school in Wisconsin. And from there, then there's also, look at all these pages. After one experience, after another experience, I've been sitting in jail with eight other people, all busted in a stakeout. I was the oldest. I was 19. And the youngest was 15, and it was a girl that they released to the juvenile detention, took her away from her parents. I was a manager of a bar in Fort Myers, Florida. And so that was, everything was going to work out. God, I got to drink all I want. And I can tell, I can hire and fire the waitresses. And pretty soon, well, other things took place. But then I go to Fort Misery. Fort Misery, that was Fort Myers. Then I go to Fort Lickerdale, and I end up in the damn Broward County Jail. And I get busted there with a quarter pound of pot and a bunch of pills and stuff. And I was just minding my own business. And this judge, I go to the preliminary hearing with the public defender and the prosecuting attorney. And the prosecuting attorney wants to put me upstate for years. And the public defender, he couldn't do much. Because I was caught red-handed. I had a car they thought was stolen. This girl that I knew in Fort Myers gave me her brother's car. He was at Paris Island, which is a Marine Corps, and this car was a 1967 Mustang convertible, black leather top, black interior leather. It was pink. It was hot pink, the car was. And it had, on the back window, it had Paris Island sticker. So they pull me over immediately, because all these cars are parked in this park, in this city park. And they pull me over. They get me because they suspect me of being AWOL. My hair's down here. I'm wearing all these army clothes. I always wore army clothes. I was cool then, you know. So they thought I was AWOL. They take me in, and then, well, they first throw me in the back of the squad car, go through my car, empty out my duffel bag, find a bunch of drugs in that, and then I go to the preliminary, and the public defender, how could he help me? He couldn't. So he was just sitting there, and I was sitting there, and the prosecuting attorney was laying out the law, and the judge, she was about 32 years old and beautiful, and I just looked at her, and I said, when it was my time to speak, I said, well, this is really going to mess up my plans. She goes, she goes, oh, and what plans are those? I said, well, I got accepted at City College in New York City for this fall, and I'm not going to be able to go if I have to go to prison. And she goes, you're free to go if I ever hear about you again, you're going to be brought back to the state and recharged, but I'm releasing you under the condition you go to the college. And it worked. And then I get out of there, they towed my car to some godforsaken yard halfway across Alligator Alley in the state of Florida. And I go out there, I hitchhike out there, God was with me. I hitchhike out there. I go in there and I talk. I tell these guys all this stuff, and they give me the car and I drive home and put it in the girl's yard, park it, stick the keys in her mailbox, and say, "Not again," and walk away. God was with me on that. You know, God always takes care of drunks and little children. Most sometimes, not always. I can't depend on it forever. That's why I'm here. See? That's part of the deal. He said, "Well, I'll give you another chance, but look at you're going to be." There's something else I was going to tell you. I come in here and I get kicked out of here. I'm walking. I'm going through the line downstairs. And there was a president then named Wayman Jones, and this was a long time ago. And his Sarah was his girlfriend, and she used to run the literature cabinet. And I'm in the line, and I didn't even tell you about my coma. I'm in Texas, right? I like to move around a lot. I live in Denver. Excuse me, people. This may take another day. What happened next was, I go through the line downstairs, and Wayman says to me, he says, "It's about time you join this club." Because I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. Oh, but anyway, back to my coma. 2 months on the coma in Texas. I weighed 185 pounds, and I'm healthy as can be before. And then I have this accident, and oh, my Jeep. And I hit a telephone pole, and it rips the top of the Jeep off, throws my occupant out, and I'm behind the wheel, and it flips 5 times, and they said I was still behind the wheel when they got me. And they show up 4 or 5 hours later. This is out in the country all night. I was up, anyway. And they take me into the hospital, and I have a seizure in the emergency room. And during the seizure, I slip into a coma for 7 weeks and 4 days. And during the 7 weeks and 4 days, my jaw was busted. This, both bones here, all this stuff was busted. And my jaw was wired shut. And so what I did get was some liquid. I wouldn't die. I don't know why. But I wouldn't die, so they didn't have to keep me on life support because I wasn't going to die. So I come in here and I got weighed in after I was 2 weeks in a nursing home in Austin, Texas, in old folks home, and my roommate was the next youngest person there. I was 26 and he was 54. Everyone else was in their 80s, 90s, and boy, you want to go someplace and hear people, perfect for Halloween, people screaming day and night. It was terrible. And I'm coming out of my coma, and I'm thinking this is normal. Where am I? Yeah, where am I? No, this is life. This is where I was raised. I accepted everything that took place. A big dose of acceptance. And so I come in here, and I'm so much underweight. I lost about 70 pounds inside 2 months, or in about 2 months. I get weighed in and weighed 118 pounds. And normally I was 185 pounds. And so then I can't work. I can't do much of anything. I was barely lucky to get here. That's another story from Texas. And so when I got here, Wayne says, "Time for you to join the club." I said, "I was just getting ready to," because I was doing a little part-time work here and there. And he and Sarah concocted this story that I said I'll do it when I get good and damn well ready, and that's not me. And so, So they get me kicked out. He gets me kicked out with her backing him up. And so, but no one trusted me because I had double vision. My eye, you know, because when I had that head injury, one of my eyes got knocked off. I was wall-eyed. And one eye looks at you, and the other one's looking at the wall. And so there was something wrong with that kid. I think he's smoking pot. And listen to this. I wore an eye patch, and Zach told me to change eyes every day. So they're saying, he can't even remember which eyes are. Oh, man. And I got to take this? Well, if I want to keep from drinking and keep coming back, I had to take it. Because I was in the condition I was in because of my drinking and my behavior, my wild, hey, what time? Oh, it's Miller time again, come on. Crack me a Miller. Well, whatever the case, and then I got kicked out of here another time too. Oh yeah. What was it this time? Oh, then I kicked myself out because I figured before I got here that I'm so handicapped and people look at me like I'm sick. Well, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to drink and I'm going to do drugs. I'm going to do it all the time. And then they can say I'm fucked up and they'll be right. And then I can accept it, see? Well, it worked that way until it's caught up with me and the drinking and going on was not healthy. So even though, man, there's a whole lot more I gotta tell you, but I can't because I need to start talking about the solution. It's only five minutes. So yes, and I believed when I came in here that and stayed. That's one thing. I came in here and I have never taken a drink from January the 8th, 1983, and I came on January the 7th. I don't know if anybody, well, Marion, you remember Michael Rafferty. He brought me to my first meeting, and that's when I was living right across Buford Highway, Pine Cone Lane, with a friend of mine, my drug dealer's mom. He was my drug dealer from before, but he cared about me, so when I got out of jail, and I spent 52 days in DeKalb County before I got in here the last time, and I've been here ever since. But after I was here a while, I realized that, damn, I'm recovering from my physical problems, and I'm recovering from alcoholism, and I better keep what I've got. And the only way I could do that is I have to give it away. If you want it. here it is coming in. And I've helped, I think I've helped a lot of people. I've enabled a lot of people. Because I've enabled so many people that they have taken me. They've taken everything and been glad to get it and never returned any of it. Well, I had one guy, and I still have the jacket, and I wear it for work. This was like in the early 80s, maybe 85 or something. And I've always been self-employed because I couldn't work for anybody else. No, I worked for somebody else, but it wouldn't last very long. Okay. And then I'd have to go back to being self-employed. I got kicked off the bus one time because the city bus, because the guy says, "You can't keep coming on my bus with all your tools." I get all my tools and I get on the bus and I go to a job in Decatur. And I couldn't, I tried to get him to let me bring my ladder. So one of our brother from in here, I was working, helping him get, you know, make some money, and something happened, and he disappeared with some of my stuff, and then he comes back about a year later. And he's got this jacket, and he gives me a brand new jacket. And he says, "Here, I want you to have this. I've been saving this for you." And he says, "You got a job?" And I said, at this time, I didn't have any work. And I said, "No, I don't. I'm sorry. And you did me dirty. But thank you for the jacket." And I still got that jacket. And it's old and dirty now. But then Jim, my sponsor, we knew each other but didn't really meet until I started having problems. And I was helping this one guy, used to live over there on, what was it, Karen, no, not Karen Court. Anyway, Duke Road. I lived on Duke Road in two different houses, a half a block away from each other, over the period of about 10 or 12, 15 years, something like that. And Jim, I go to him because I helped this one guy out who's a crackhead. And he gets a nice Nikon camera, a nice telephoto lens, and a bunch of stuff, and then tells me he didn't do it. You know, I couldn't prove that he did it. But Jim comes over, and I said, "Well, there's his car." And I look in his car, and there was my jar of change in his trunk, or something, backseat or something. And so I couldn't get him out. I had his father's number. His father lived in St. Louis or something. So I called him and asked him, what should I do? And he gets huffy and says, "Let me talk to that boy." So I tell his son to call him, and he calls him, and then he flies him back out to St. Louis, and everything's over. And I never got another penny, or I never got any. Anyway, that was once. Then I have another crackhead. I've lost everything, but they say you can't keep what you got unless you give it away. So I give it away. I wish I could do it willfully. It's almost time to get the hook. I did want to say one thing, though, here. Which no, it wasn't that wrong. Yes, here it is. Did you ever think you weren't good enough for something, somebody? Oh, and I went to California. I was a foreman trainee in Hollywood. Hollywood! Hollywood! Where you been? I've been to Hollywood. I never thought I was good enough for this girl. Oh, yeah. But I did her dirty. I took it, and I still owe her an amends. She's gotten married and has a nice family. She lives in Austin, Texas. And I got her a message, but I've yet to do a nice step with her. I am responsible. Anytime, anywhere. Oh, did I tell you about meeting Chevy Chase? I yelled at him out of the truck. And he was getting his paper, and he raised his hand up like that. But he's got this huge fence in front of his house, and you can't see him. But I'm in this truck that's way higher than the fence. And I go, "Hey, Chevy!" And he throws up his hand, and he looks like this, and he ditches in the house. Well, caught him. I did want to say, if I can't find it, I want to say, I said it, I can't keep what I've got unless I give it away. It's freebie. It was freely given, and I had to freely receive it. And God bless us all.
Thank you, Brian. Did you bring your key tonight?
Yeah, of course I did.
You want to make an early announcement?
Yes, I have a key to the electric cabinet, and I'll be the cabinet after the meeting.
All right. Set of tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Donations support the group and AA at Zoom. I've asked Mike to give out the chips.